I don't believe that life is black and white. I don't believe that everything has to go one way or the other. But I do think that people have a tendency to see things that way. When something happens, they have to fit it into the terms of a story. There has to be a beginning, an ending, a good guy, and a bad guy. And I think that when we view things that way, we start to lose sight of the truth about what happened and who these people were. And I don't think that anybody understands this better than David because of his brother Ted.
Well, it might be interesting to start at the beginning, which is talking a little bit about my family. Yeah, I grew up in a family of four people, mom and dad, and my older brother, Ted, and me. Ted is 7.5 years older than me. And from the time I was a child, I realized that he was special. Mostly, I think, in a very good way. He was extremely brilliant. His IQ was measured at 165 when he was, I think, about 13 years old. And, you know, you're thought to be a genius at 140, so Ted was remarkably smart. Now, there was also some unease that I felt at times about Ted. I never felt the slightest unease in his presence. I mean, he was a good big brother, but he would isolate himself a lot. He had very few friends in school, and I remember asking our mother, you know, what's up with Ted? Why doesn't he have friends, or why does he behave this way? She said that when Ted was a little baby, 9 months old, he had gotten sick, and they had to take him to the hospital. And in those days, families weren't very welcome at hospitals. It was like they saw the little baby as like a little machine that you fix, and they didn't want the parents getting in the way. So they were only allowed to visit 3 times a week for 2 hours. And it seems like, at least in Mom's perception, Ted really lost something during that period in the hospital. I recall her saying to me once, David, don't ever abandon your brother. He probably doesn't remember the hospital experience, but abandonment is what he fears the most. And of course, I was very moved by this story, and I said, oh, Mom, of course, I'd never abandon Ted.
At the age of 16, Ted entered Harvard. It should have been a fresh start.
When Ted was in college, actually, he was terribly stressed. He had volunteered for a psychological experiment of young men at Harvard, and it was an experiment that he was involved in for 3 years, and it was clearly an abusive experiment. It would not pass today's ethical tests for informed consent, respecting the dignity of the... And the experiments involved subjecting young men to stress, having their values, their dignity challenged, and seeing how they would react to that. Might have been 16. I know Mom remembered having to sign a release because he was not yet 18. And her thought at the time was, well, maybe these nice psychologists will help my son with his, you know, social awkwardness. And, of course, the likelihood is that they did him grave damage. When I was a junior in college, that summer, Ted was had decided to quit his job, and he had actually decided to go looking for land up in northern Canada. And I joined him for about 6 weeks that summer, and we spent a lot of time camping up through Saskatchewan, British Columbia. We actually made it to the Yukon. I think at one point we wanted to make it to Alaska, never quite made it this far on the Alcan Highway. And we were close. There were times when I thought, you know, why is Ted so rigid? I remember there was one particular occasion when he was, you know, trying to decide on a piece of land, and he got so shut down. It was like, I'd try to engage him in conversation, and he was, it was like he was so troubled by something, or so ambivalent. I'm not sure. I sometimes wondered later if this was the ambivalence of, you know, do I want people or do I not want people? Do I, you know, as Ted grew older and was a teenager, I always get the sense, you know, he didn't need people, or that was the kind of message or the vibe that came out of my brother. And years later, when he was living in the forest in Montana in this cabin. Mom and Dad started receiving these very, very angry letters from Ted. And the basic gist of those letters was that he's been, you know, unhappy all his life. And now he'd had a lot of time to think about it and try to understand why he was so unhappy. And he told them he felt he was unhappy because they never truly loved him.
When did he start to endorse the views that he endorses now?
I think he was probably in his early 20s. I don't, you know, again, 7.5 years difference. I seem to remember that when I was in high school, so he might have been in his mid-20s, already teaching at Berkeley when he began to talk about, you know, the downside of technology. There was a lot, actually, in the culture about this. You know, the environmental movement was just getting started. Also in terms of his decision to leave his job and go out to Montana and try to live off the land, there was a whole movement back in the 60s and early 70s about, you know, returning to the earth, returning to the land. So in some sense, you know, there was a cultural context for it that made a lot of sense to me. But it seemed like Ted's views had a kind of obsessive quality about them, so that when we would talk, it would be hard for him to, you know, look at it from any different way. It's like he had this one way of looking at it. So I sometimes had concerns that the, you know, there was something overly rigid about the belief system, the ideology. At that point, I was living in Texas. I'd visited our parents, and I remember Mom saying, "Gee, Dave, on your way back to Texas, you think you might want to stop off in Montana and see Ted?" You know, Mom's sense of geography was a little skewed there.
It's, right.
You know, but you know, I did really for her. I knew she was very worried, and I told her, "I think, you know, Ted's okay." You know, and his hygiene was really awful, but that was his lifestyle. There were things we couldn't talk about. Seems like more things every year.